In order to perform at your best, you have to be your best. To be your best, you have to eat your best. Pam Kleins, a nutritional consultant, joins us every couple of weeks. Hello, Pamela.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. I want to start out, because we're in this Olympic mode, what do you make of the story about the Chinese team who blames their diet, their veggie diet, their vegetarian diet, on their poor performance?
Yes, this was at a world tournament in volleyball, and just a few weeks before this particular tournament that just happened before the Olympics, they had gone on a vegetarian diet or a near-vegetarian diet and performed very, very poorly at this particular world tournament. And so, you know, the coach essentially sounded in this article that I read like he or she was kicking himself for allowing this to happen, because it obviously had weakened the athletes and adversely affected the outcome of the tournament.
Now, do you buy it, or does it sound like an excuse?
Oh, I completely buy it. You know, historically, when you look back and you hear some of the claims made by vegetarians with regards to making them stronger as athletes, actually that the opposite is very, very true. And so it's very easy to get lured into a vegetarian diet thinking that it's very, very healthy. But indeed, you know, most people who have done this have felt nothing but adverse effects from it. So essentially what happens is their performances weaken. They certainly don't improve in the long run.
When we think about, it's not about eating. I know many people think that, you can't eat what you want. Eating smart, meat is part of, and protein is obviously part of eating smart. Your muscles require protein for recovery, and you want to go to the best source of protein, and that's animal products.
That's right. And meat is very special in that, of course, it has a lot of energy-giving nutrients, including CoQ10 and carnosine and carnitine. Of course, it's going to have a wide array of healthy fats in there as well that are going to be your fuel for energy. So, unfortunately, you know, red meat has had a really bad rap, and athletes should be using red meat as part of their diet. But unfortunately, you know, I think that there's a lot of food scares and a lot of misinformation that's out there that is distracting people from eating this this very, very nutritious food. And I think really, in terms of some of the nutrients that I just mentioned, I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think we still have a lot of nutrients that we're going to discover in red meat that are very unique in terms of our health and even giving us energy, because some of the nutrients I mentioned actually are part of the energy cycle in the body. And so when I put people back on red meat, if they've been red meat phobic, and they start eating red meat again, boy, oh boy, they always come back to me telling me they have more energy.
We always look to athletes and their diets in terms of as one of the maybe the keys to their success, or to properly be at your best. You make sure you're properly fueled. But doesn't it work almost the other way, in terms of we look at athletes and we copy their diet, and I'll get to my, you'll see where I'm going in a second, and it's to our detriment. And one of the problems we've seen lately with people who are involved in any sort of semi-endurance, so if you want to run for a 5K or 10K or training for a marathon, I mean, they think they have to carbo load. And this term has come in, and really, I mean, when they looked at carbo loading, they found that unless you're an extreme endurance athlete or working out like Michael Phelps in a pool for 6 hours a day, no one needs to carbo load.
No.
Yet we've taken carbs, which are pure energy, and there's a point to carb. I'm like, yeah, Michael Phelps needs that many calories because he expends that much heat, but you don't. You
right.
don't so need that many carbs.
Carbohydrates are like putting twigs or kindle on a fire, and fat is like putting a log on the fire. So fat is what gives you a long and sustaining energy, whereas carbs is just, you know, quick and over with. But there are consequences to relying on carbohydrates for energy, because there's an addictive quality to carbohydrates. They can dysregulate your metabolism, starve your brain. So you really don't want to turn to carbs. Whenever I see athletes drinking these sugary drinks and they think they're getting energy from it, well, it's not a really good energy, unfortunately, and there will be consequences for it. And you know, these drinks that are highly sugary, of course, and they say that they replace their electrolytes. Unfortunately, you know, electrolytes, your minerals must be in a very, very precise balance for you to be healthy. And a lot of these drinks have the minerals in them, but they're not in the correct ratios. So they're actually competing against a healthy biochemistry. So I do not recommend any of those sports drinks at all.
And then when I look at, well, if it's good enough for an athlete in terms of carbo loading, that, you know what, well, it must be good for me. When people are like, yeah, no, you're not burning off those calories in the next 2 hours. You are going to be sitting on the couch watching television. That plate of spaghetti is just going to turn into fat in your body. Most people think it's good for an athlete, must be good for me.
Yeah, but when you look too, Tom, at the history of some of the elite athletes going back several decades and even into primitive cultures, they trained with things like raw cream. So lots of animal fat in their diet. Some of the top athletes in Switzerland historically and countries like, in Africa and Kenya with the Maasai tribe, they trained with raw cream in their diet. And that's what gave them energy and endurance and overall good health.
Pam Kleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. Do you work with a lot of athletes or people who want to have an active lifestyle? And do you work with a lot of people who are looking to be more active? Only because, you know, they try to do the right thing. And of course, you want to promote, I work out, you play tennis, we all do things. You know, my producer, Kevin Jack, likes to play hockey. Of course, we want to produce an active lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But do you find there's a lot of misconceptions among people who are trying to do the right thing, get active, but just using the wrong food?
They're using the wrong food, but they also have a very weak constitution to begin with, and the exercise is actually backfiring on them. And this is a big, big subject. It's obviously going to push a lot of people's buttons because, you know, really people are brainwashed to think that all this heavy exercise is healthy. And I was one of those people. I used to think jogging and running on a treadmill or using elliptical machines at the gym, you know, I used to think all of that was going to give me energy. Little did I realize it was actually depleting my battery. So I now, when I work with people, Tom, I usually work with recovering athletes as well as recovering vegetarians, people who really believe these myths that strenuous exercise is healthy or that a vegetarian diet was healthy, and they crash and burn with things like depression or chronic fatigue. And so then I have to get them so that they are doing everything that we're not supposed to do, like eating red meat and avoiding strenuous exercise. So those are the things I have to do with people when I work with them to help them regain their health. So my clients are instructed to not do any strenuous exercise whatsoever in terms of their recovery.
Pam Kleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. When we come back, Pam, I want you to talk about, it seems the tide is changing, not quite in the grocery store where you see all sorts of low-fat claims, but among nutritionists and those in the medical community, that the low-fat diet was the wrong way to go. That low fat seems to be the improper diet. Not pure fat, obviously, but the low fat myth, if you will, seems to be correcting. Although you wouldn't know it from the store shelves, it seems experts are saying, probably not the best thing for you. Low fat is probably not at all the best thing for you. So when we come back, Pam will look at the low fat lie and tell us why that's the wrong diet. 15 minutes after 11 o'clock, my name's Tom McConnell. Pam Kleen, nutritional consultant, is our guest, and this is 610 CKTV. Pam Kleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. And Pam, I don't notice it in store shelves right now where low fat still seems to be prevalent on, or fat free, which is even worse, which is prevalent on a lot of labels. But we're seeing a growing tide of food writers, nutritionists, people who are in, medicine, thinking that the low fat experiment should be ended.
That's correct. You're absolutely right, Tom. There are more and more people coming forward saying that we've made a huge mistake using this low-fat diet for the last 30, 40, 50 years, and that is backfiring on us in terms of our health, or not just our physical health, but our mental health as well. And so I've been trying to warn people about this very, very nutrient-deficient diet now for many, many years, and I've been frustrated because I don't see necessarily the media responding or health professionals responding. But just in the last little while, just in the last year or so, I think things are turning around, and that, you know, eventually we're going to see the universities changing their stance on this issue, researchers changing their stance on this issue, and even possibly, and I'm not going to hold my breath, but possibly even Health Canada will change their stance on this and actually fix the food guide, because it's the food guide that has really gotten us into a lot of trouble in terms of our health. It's a completely upside down food guide.
What I find interesting, and the one, and you and I have talked about Gary Taubes a number of times, and it was his book way back 2001, and I think I even went to the original article on the New York Times.
That was an article, you're right.
The Toxic Sugar.
In the New York Times, and then it was followed by a book, Good Calories, Bad
That's
Calories,
it.
Which I think was that 2008?
2008, right. It was Toxic Sugar was the first part, and then he explored it further and looked at good calories, bad calories, because I was always under the impression your body can use, in times of distress, in times of starvation, for instance, our body can use proteins. It will break down its own muscle to consume energy. Fats, for instance, carbohydrate, that'll consume it all, but not all calories are created equal. And Tubbs pointed out, with all the research, that it's really fats and carbohydrates have totally different roles in the body, and that when we've gone low fat, we have to have basically replace it with carbohydrates, yet the whole time we've had less fat in our diet, we've gotten fatter, that mm-hmm. we put on pounds, that mm-hmm. maybe it's the terms, because we always assume if something is fat, it'll make you fat. But we found out that isn't true at all.
No, it's not true at all. It's carbohydrates that drive insulin and insulin that drives fat. So everybody needs to remember that mantra. And that's based on endocrinology. There's nothing fictitious about it.
Oh my God,
exactly,
that is
how it works.
Yeah. And that what's interesting as well, when you sent me, remember the video by Lostig, was it? And he talked
Robert
about
Lustig,
Robert Lustig. And he says, we know this on the cellular level. This is how we know this, the cellular functions. We know this. Why would it be any different in the body as a whole? If every cell individually acts like this, then in the body as a whole, it has to act like this. And then when you think about it, our low fat, at the same time we're so preoccupied with low fat, we have a rise in diabetes. And diabetes is triggered by a lack of insulin response. And it's the overconsumption of carbohydrates that it now starts to make sense where our diabetes epidemic has come from.
Right, and I think a lot of consumers need to realize that the reason why we got into this mess had to do with something called marketing-based science, that essentially food lobbyists and people in the food industry in general basically fabricated science and manipulated for their own profit. And we unfortunately took the brunt of all of that. We have suffered for that. So I think what has to happen is the universities need to train the students how to interpret the differences between marketing-based science and real science and common sense, for that matter. So as we've seen this transition, as you say, Tom, over the last, 50 years or so, where we have displaced the nutrient-dense animal fats and replaced them with more nutrient-poor foods like carbohydrates, this has been a disaster for us in terms of our health. So if it only makes sense that we return to the way we used to eat when we were actually healthy. And I always tell everybody, before World War II, that was an era before we had a lot of these food phobias like cholesterol phobia and red meat phobia and butter phobia and egg phobia and so on. So when we used to eat these foods before World War II, we were actually much healthier than we are now. So we do need to return to common sense and reintegrate these foods very happily and easily into our lives without any stress.
Now, the one fat that we have taken out, and the science seems to back it, though, is trans fat. But trans fat is almost, I don't know how to describe it, a manufactured fat, though, isn't it?
Right. It's a synthetic fat. I mean, there are trans fats in nature, but they're healthy trans fats.
But it's not in huge consumptions that we'd see that we acquire, that we can eat now with our packaged foods.
Mm-hmm. But the natural trans fats our body can recognize and use.
Okay.
The difference between the natural trans fats that you might find in things like butter, and that would be conjugated linoleic acid, for example. That's a healthy trans fat. You're talking about the trans fats that you would find in highly processed vegetable oils that are turned into things like margarine, for example. So that, you're right, Tom, those are the fats that have really gotten into a lot of health problems as well. And one of the reasons for that is because these trans fats, our body simply can't recognize them. They're new to us, and our bodies are kind of confused when we eat them. So it puts us into a biochemical chaotic mess when we eat the trans fats. And they're so real, they're toxic to our bodies. And so it's really, really confusing for us to eat these very newfangled fats. fats. And the other part of the other side to the story, of course, is that not only are these fats toxic, they have displaced the fats that our bodies actually need. So we get a double whammy in terms of choosing those fats over natural fats, like things like butter and lard and tallow, for example.
It's hard to convince people, though. It's hard to convince people that you know, buying low fat, because they've been so convinced that fat is bad. It's so hard to convince people that fat is not bad, that fat is not evil, that fat, you know, low fat is like, oh, I'll buy low fat. And I find myself at the grocery store, because I do a lot of my shopping, looking at products, and it's like 1% cottage cheese. No, I think I'll go for the regular cottage cheese, or there's low fat or zero fat yogurt. And I'm like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, why get zero fat yogurt? That's the good stuff, the fat, because the flavor, fat is flavor. And if you take out all the fat, you're replacing it with sugar, and sugar, as we know, far worse.
That's right. One of my clients has lost 105 pounds eating a diet high in animal fat. And he happens to be of Dutch ancestral lineage, so his ancestors would have very healthily eaten, you know, 70 or 80% of their calories from animal fat. And so he switched to a diet high in animal fat, and over the last year, he has lost 105 pounds. And ironically, he works for a national food chain here in Canada, and he is also a manager of the dairy section. And he now knows, when he buys dairy products, to always choose the versions that are the highest in animal fat. And he's just as happy as a clam today, because he's done so well, and he's so much healthier today than he was a year ago. And he just basically did the opposite of everything his doctors and nutritionists told him to do.
George Costanza, do the opposite. Do the opposite. Whatever they're telling you, do the opposite. You'll turn out fine. And I know from my own experience, eating, as you describe them, the nutrient-dense foods, the higher in fat and higher fat content foods, it leaves you, as you said, saturated and satiety are from the same root. It leaves me with a feeling of fullness for a lot longer.
That's right.
That you can go through a box of crackers like nothing, but some high-fat yogurt, you can have a smaller amount, and it'll keep you satisfied for a longer period of time.
You're absolutely right, Tom.
Pamela, always a pleasure. Take care. Enjoy the Olympics.
Will do. You too, Tom. Thanks for everything.
Take care. 28 minutes after 11 o'clock. This